Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 7 of the Tapecast. This is not going to be like the last 6 episodes of the show where it was kind of open format and we talk about, you know, some takes, some football, some soccer, whatever. This is going to be a preview for the World Cup for betting and daily fantasy purposes. Going to go through the odds. I have Bovada pulled up if you want to look at the odds that I'm using. If you're a sharp sports bettor out there, if you're a subscriber to the Action Network and you know how to shop and get all the best lines, obviously these prices on Bovada are terrible. It's just, if you've ever hosted a podcast before, Bovada is the easiest to navigate. It's the most accessible for American customers. That's what most of my friends use. I'm being joined by Sean Newsham from the Action Network. How great is it that you're a tout now, man? You can come on the show and rep a product.
I mean, I get absolutely blasted by multiple of our friends for being a tout, but it feels good. Like, I mean, talking about soccer and hockey stuff, I don't mind doing anyways. And it's not like I'm full touting plays most of the time, especially over the Action Network. We have a lot of great betting tools, and we're talking about a lot of bets heading into the World Cup. So it's nice. It's nice to finally get that consistent income instead of having to rely off the DFS income.
Just consistently punting at DFS, really. Rough times, you know.
It's difficult. I mean,
when I won't share my lineups with you, you know, you don't even know what to do.
Clearly
I copy and paste my lineup to you. Like, how can you even generate a lineup?
Clearly. I mean, that's clearly what certain people on Twitter think. So, I mean, I don't know how I survive out there. Like, it's difficult, right?
It's tough. Yeah. So what we're going to do is we're just going to go through every group of the World Cup, A through, I think the last one is H. We're going to give out some bets that we like. Maybe if we're feeling really nice, we'll give you some set piece takers from these teams for daily fantasy purposes. Talk a little bit of daily fantasy strategy for each of the teams and, predict our winner of the World Cup. And then actually, I think at the end, we should talk a little bit of showdown strategy. It will help some of the people out because everyone's so bad at it. MLS showdown is my favorite thing in fantasy history. I haven't lost yet in MLS showdown.
I mean, I'm getting off more money for international friendly showdown slates versus people I've literally never seen before in my life compared to EPL slates towards the end of the season. So it's more fun sweat. I totally understand why people play. I think as people figure it out and it becomes more of a commonplace, it's going to be totally – everyone's going to have the same line because it plays very straightforward. But yeah, like, you just look at the lineups right now and it's just mind blowing what people are doing in showdown slates.
They're going to be like massive showdown GPPs for World Cup too. Like, I don't have the schedule memorized or anything, but if there's like a German game that's like late in the afternoon, it's like the last game, there'll be like a 30K showdown slate for that.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some big ones. I mean, especially once you get towards the end of the tournament, when you get to like the semifinals, the quarterfinals, and the finals, when you're only having one or two games on a day, like, those showdown slates are going to be huge. Like, the finals for the showdown slate is going to be massive GPPs, which is good because in previous years, you get to a spot where you have a showdown or you have a game for a final, like a Champions League final, and there's absolutely no DFS implications for it. And it's rendered that game not like, totally not interesting, but it's a lot more fun when you have a lot of action riding on certain players within the game. And if you remove the DFS aspect, from my perspective, it removes a lot of the fun of watching the game or the misery. I mean, depending on how the game goes, obviously.
Didn't one year they do the Europa League final and the Champions League final like a week apart in the same slate? I feel like 3 years ago they did that where it was like an 8-day gap with like the contests were active.
I think they did something weird. I forget. I don't think they did that because I think I would remember that, but they might have. I think they did like the Champions League final like last year, not this year, with like
an MLS game.
Yeah, like an MLS game or something. Yeah. And it was just, I remember they did something weird where they had an international friendly on a slate also with like real MLS games. And it's just mind blowing because the friendlies and the sub patterns are just insane. And obviously the game doesn't mean anything. So It's funny when you see those completely random slates that are just thrown out there to get money grabs in.
I love the random slates. I just love MLS slates in general. That's like why I live to DFS now.
Well, if you could go to every game in the world, you'd be a millionaire by now because you literally have a 400% ROI.
I run at an undefeated clip going to Sporting Kansas City games. It's real nice.
Yeah, if you could just go to a Sporting KC game every day and play some sort of DFS slate for it, you'd just be loaded.
I'd just be mad.
It doesn't even matter how much money you got off because you just win everything when you go to a game.
Yep. All right, well, let's do this. We will start with Group A, which consists of Russia, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Uruguay. The odds are as follows: Uruguay minus 140, Russia plus 180, Egypt plus 700, and Saudi Arabia plus 5,000 to win the group. In terms of these teams, Uruguay, pretty good, but they play a pretty defensive style of football. Russia, not a strong team. They didn't have to go through qualifying, though, because they automatically got in as the host nation. Egypt, outside of Mohamed Salah, not a great team. Saudi Arabia, very bad soccer team. So for betting, what bets specifically do you like for this group, Sean?
Something I wrote up, I actually wrote up the Russia preview over at Action Network, but all of the previous statistics that you have in the recent 5 to 6 World Cups are fantastic for the home team that's hosting. In the last 5 World Cups, there were 6 host teams because Japan and Korea split hosting. And of those 6 teams, 5 have, I believe, advanced, and 4 of them have won groups. And the only team that did not advance was South Africa, who the only reason they didn't advance was on goal differential. So of all those teams, they're all winning groups. They all get good point totals. The lowest point total was 4 with the South Africans when they hosted. But this group's just really weak. It's really the weakest group by far in the tournament. I don't think anyone would tell you anything differently. And with Uruguay being the top team in the group, really, you have a team that doesn't score tons of goals, even though they have Luis Suarez the top. They just don't score tons of goals. And when you have a team that just doesn't score tons of goals, it means that teams that also play defensive or might be a weaker side have chances to stay in games because they're just not getting put away by elite talent. So you could have a group here that just doesn't have tons of goals and just has low scoring games. So like, if you have a team like Russia that can get a result against Uruguay, all of a sudden that group's wide open. With Egypt missing Mohamed Salah, it's just a massive situation. So like, that's the biggest news heading into it, but
it seems like he will be able to play at least 2 of the games, but right now it's up in the air if he's going to be able to play the first game on the 15th against Uruguay, which, like, I actually think if you were going to choose a game for him to miss, it would be that one, because you put him in against Saudi Arabia, you put him in against Russia, he's likely to be able to generate the goal that you need to, you know, create the difference there.
Yeah, I mean, him being in against the weaker teams, like, if you get 4 points in that group, you probably advance. And if you can get 6, obviously, you're definitely advancing. So Salah is the big question mark. It's hard to really give great opinions on this group without the knowledge of Salah, because without him, Egypt's probably the worst team in the group. However, they're pretty good defensively, and they really are compact the way they play. So it's going to be a situation where if Salah can play, he's really the only way they can generate offense. If he doesn't play, they're going to have a really difficult time generating goals.
For daily fantasy purposes, players you need to know for this group are Salah, probably Elmo Ahmed. I don't actually know how to say his last name. Elmo Haddadi, the right wing back for Egypt. Saudi Arabia, it's hard to believe that they'll be in a game flow where they'll be super useful. For Russia, Alexander Golovin. And then who would you consider else for Russia to be really viable for DFS?
Samadov for Russia, he's been taking a lot of their set pieces. You have, like, Samadov, you have Zagoyev, and then you have Zhirkov, who those guys are all, like, set piece takers. The question is going to be with their minutes. Alexander Golovin doesn't come off the field, and if you see normal slates, the problem is on the first day you're going to get a Saudi Arabia-Russia showdown slate for sure, which, by the way, this has to be one of the worst openers for a World Cup in the history.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's awful, but you're going to have a Russia slowdown slate. A guy like Golovin's been playing 90 minutes in every friendly. He's a guy that just doesn't come off the field. So, like, when you look at someone like that, if you're trying to avoid sub patterns, he's a great play. And he does churn stats decently. He might not cross as much. He doesn't take as many set pieces, but the guy's all over the field, and he just churns out stats for you from a DFS perspective.
And then for Uruguay, Cavani, Suarez. The fullbacks actually do okay, kind of depending on game flow. So it's like Ricardo Pereira and then Martin Caceres, they do all right for DFS. They're not great.
Yeah, really, I mean, you look at this group, there's no real explosive players that are going to put in tons of peripheral stats. Honestly, Luis Suarez has been known to take a lot of direct set pieces for Uruguay, and he's a guy that is going to be the most likely player to score in every game within that group. So I think Suarez is a decent play within that group, especially in Saudi Arabia. They play more of an attacking style. So against Saudi Arabia, you might see a bit more flow where Uruguay can really pound Saudi Arabia.
My bet for this group would be Egypt to advance. I actually have that ticket already. That would be the only bet that I really like from this group.
Yeah, I like Russia to win the group. Like I said, they're not great. They're not a great team. They did look much better yesterday in their friendly, but they just look better overall in certain aspects. But the group's really weak, and the home team generally has a massive edge in this tournament. So I like Russia possibly to win the group, but also you can get Russia plus 825 to finish dead last in the group, which I also think is a very viable play because they're not a great team. So I think you could see them very easily go on either end of the spectrum. So those are the two bets I'd look at. I wouldn't really go anywhere else within that group.
Suarez is actually 25-1 to be the top goal scorer, and I actually think that's okay.
I think that's really good. The only issue with that for Suarez is no matter what happens, he's going to get out of that group and draw Portugal or Spain. So it's difficult to win Golden Boot unless you make it to a semifinal. I know James did in 2014. And only got to a quarter, but
he'd have to score like a hat trick against Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, you need 6 to 7 goals to win the Golden Boot. So in order to get the Golden Boot, Suarez would probably need 5 goals to come out of group stage, and they'd probably need to somehow get a result in the Portugal Spain round of 16 game. Because once they get through the round of 16, they could get a reasonable matchup in the next round, in the round of 8. But they would probably have to get there, but he definitely could put up quite a few goals against Saudi Arabia, and a hat trick's not out of the question.
All right, so next we have Group B, Spain minus 200 to win, Portugal plus 200 to win, Morocco plus 1600 to win, Iran plus 3300 to win. Like very long odds for Morocco and Iran because Spain and Portugal are probably two of them. In this tournament, Portugal won the Euro 2016. This group, unfortunately, is kind of brutal for DFS, ironically, outside of Morocco. Because what happens with Portugal is it's all about Ron. But Ron, in these games, like he's not going to get anything off against Spain. And then Portugal's sets are also a mess because you only get about 60 minutes of whoever starts taking sets. And then Ricardo Quaresma subs on and takes them for the rest of the game. And Quaresma's 35 now, so like he probably won't start any of the group stage games. Maybe he would start a quarterfinal game or a semifinal game.
I can see Quaresma getting a start in one of the games against Morocco or Iran. But yeah, as you said, like if Quaresma comes on, generally he is the guy that takes the set pieces. And I mean, even if he doesn't take the set pieces, that guy literally will cross at every single second he can get. But yeah, as you talked about, Spain doesn't generate DFS chances. Portugal's just a mess outside of Ronaldo. They have a bunch of mediocre guys. Morocco's the real play, and it's going to be Hakim Ziyech.
The Moroccan team is actually underrated.
Yeah, the Moroccan team is totally underrated. They're really good. I wish they got a different draw because I really like that team. And if they had a different draw, it would be more likely for them to get out. However, Portugal doesn't score goals in these
They could definitely beat Portugal.
They can get a result. They can somehow get a result against Portugal, and then Spain beats both of them. All of a sudden, it's going to come down to a goal differential game against Iran for both of those teams. And Morocco has the talent. Like, Hakim Ziyech is going to be great for them. He's going to have probably all the set pieces, I would assume.
Their whole starting lineup plays top five league football. Every single one plays in one of the five best European leagues, which is you very rarely see that from these smaller nations.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. I mean, most of those guys are playing domestically, and they're not playing all over the world. But it's definitely a situation where Morocco has enough talent to get through. It's just the group draw for them is just not a great one.
Yeah. So I actually, you know what? Now that I'm looking at this a little bit closer, I'm going to make a bet live on air. I am betting Morocco 16-1 to advance from this group. Because really, if you look at it, what they have to do is draw with Portugal. If they draw with Portugal and they beat up on Iran and only lose to Spain like 2-0, they probably advance, right?
They probably advance, but that 16-1 number is actually for them to win the group, which obviously I don't envision them winning the group.
Yeah, that's egregious. Okay, but plus 325 to advance.
Yeah,
which
is definitely possible. I mean, we saw Portugal in the Euros in 2016 literally what, not score a goal for the entire tournament, basically, and advance like 0-0 and then win on pens or win in extra time every single game for the entirety of the tournament. So when you have that as your what you're relying on, all of a sudden, it's not hard for teams to get some decent results. So it's a situation where Morocco definitely has a talent to advance. And Spain, it's honestly one of the groups I'm least excited about, because I don't get excited watching Spain games. The Spain-Portugal game is just going to be terrible, especially from a DFS perspective. Like, it's going to be a great spectacle, but from a DFS perspective, it's just not going to have much in it, because Spain doesn't generate and they're going to hold the possession the whole time.
Yeah. So the best, actually, here's a good tip. You could parlay Spain to advance from this group stage with any other bet you make in the tournament. I would say this is, I feel the most confident about Spain advancing from this group as I do. I feel more confident they will advance than even like Germany or France.
Yeah, I think that Spain and Belgium are the two teams I feel most confident to advance in the entire tournament. I find either of those two teams not advancing to be very difficult to perceive. But honestly, there's a lot of value in betting on Portugal to win that group too. Portugal's plus 200 to win the group. And
all they have to do is – that's like all they have to do is beat Spain.
Well, if they beat Spain, they're going to win the group. And all, if they draw against Spain, just puts the other two games into a goal differential situation too. So
I think they will have a better goal differential than Spain for sure. Spain, the ideal Spain game is like 2-0 with like 900 passes, and Iniesta spends the whole game just like passing it to Go or whoever.
Like, yeah, but if you have,
they're,
if you
so
have a
boring
situation where you get a draw in that game, and then all of a sudden Portugal beats Morocco, and it's, they each have 4 points going to the last game, you're going to have Portugal against Iran, possibly with Iran eliminated and Portugal being advanced already, where they can just go all out for goals. So against that Iranian team in a game that doesn't matter, that could be a situation where Portugal could put up goals to make it happen. So it's definitely, in my opinion, the best bet in that group is Portugal to win the group at plus 200.
And I would actually say, while we're here, Ronaldo to win the Golden Boot because of the group, I actually think it's a bad bet. I think that's not the bet you would like to make on him this year.
Yeah, I don't think that Ronaldo to win the Golden Boot's a great bet within this. And I mean, I know he's going to be one of the guys that is heavily talked about. I believe he's third or fourth right now.
Well, it's actually weird, because most years he would be tied with, like, just because that's the way markets work, is him and Messi would be the co-favorites. But the group is so bad that Neymar is actually ahead of him.
Yeah, I mean, I never would have expected to see going into the World Cup. Like, right now in Pinnacle, the leading person for the Golden Boot is Griezmann, which I just would never have expected.
Oh, that's the rare case of better odds being found on Bovada/Bodog, because Griezmann is 12-1.
Yeah, on Pinnacle, Griezmann is 6-1 to win the Golden Boot. And you have actually Messi's third. It goes Griezmann, Neymar, then Messi and Ronaldo, which, I mean, you never would have expected to see something like that.
No, it's definitely a function of the group. So Group B, my bet is Morocco to advance at plus 325. Your bet is what?
Portugal plus 200 to win the group.
All right, there we go. Group C, this is probably the most lopsided group, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable opinion to take on that situation. I mean, there's enough. Australia, I can't see them advancing. Peru, on the other hand, they just got Paulo Guerrero. He was cleared to play. They're not a bad team.
They're actually probably better than Denmark.
They might be. Well, Denmark, I mean, if you look down the Denmark roster, I mean, Lord Bentner was left.
I meant to ask you this the other day. Why did they not bring Ankersen and Dermacy, the fullbacks?
They have a lot of different options. I mean, they left Lord Bentner at home, and they brought Dolberg with them because I think
Dolberg is better than Bentner at this point.
Well, of course, but Denmark, I mean, if you look up and down the Denmark roster, like, you don't have much talent there. And if you look through the qualifying results.
That's why I was so – Ankersen, like, did everything for – like, he was great in the Euros. I was – maybe he's hurt and I just didn't see it. Well, yeah. let me – for the people who are not World Cup, you know, religious devotees like we are, this is the group: France, Denmark, Peru, Australia. France is minus 300. Denmark's plus 450. Peru is plus 800. And Australia is plus 2,500 to win the group. So France is probably, would you say they're the most talented team?
Yes. Going into the World Cup,
they just don't win anything for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. I mean, over the last year, we've had some really good discussions where Davis was proven to be wrong, where we talk about Anthony Martial. And for a year, I told him Anthony Martial was not going to be at the World Cup. And
I mean, he should be, though, because, like, I even like Florian Thauvin, but Martial off the bench is just, like, he's just a better option for what you need. Like, imagine them, you know, they're 1-1 against Germany in the final, and Deschamps looks down his bench, and he needs someone to just roast Joshua Kimmich. He doesn't have it. I guess no. Lamar is who he would bring on.
Yeah, I have no idea who he's going to even end up starting. I was watching the one friendly last week, and Nabil Fekir and Mbappe looked fantastic playing together. They really did.
Well, the back line is set. The midfield, I think, their best midfield, I think, is obvious, but he won't play it.
Probably not.
The annoying thing is that if you play Conte, you can play him alone. He can basically handle the midfield by himself. So you could play him next to Fekir and Pogba, but he will not do that.
I don't think he'll do that. But I mean, that goes to why they should have brought Adrian Rabiot. Rabiot would be a perfect person to play in that midfield with Pogba, Conte, and Rabiot. But they left Rabiot.
They'll basically play a 4-4-2 with Conte, Pogba, but Pogba will be asked to play as like an 8, not what? Well, actually, he'll be more asked to play like a 6. And then it'll be Griezmann and Giroud starting at striker, and then it will be Lamar and Mbappe on the outside.
I'm interested. That's, I mean, the talent they have is just mind blowing. Like, they could easily create another semifinalist with their reserves. So their talent level is amazing. It's just whether or not they can click. I mean, we watched the 2016 Euros, and we watched most of it together, and it was hilarious that the key to that team during that Euro tournament seemed to be your boy Sissoko. When he came on, it really seemed to settle them down and really.
You know what? Which is crazy because he's a trash bag.
I he's awful, but I really honestly I thought there was a chance they were going to bring him to this tournament just because of him literally like riding the ship in the Euros.
It's just because they need a player like that, and you're right, Rabiot, he would do the same thing, and they just the issue is that, you know, they just don't have a good manager, and I actually do believe at international tournaments managers matter even more so than in club soccer.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. I think that's definitely something. I mean, we'll get back to bad managers when we get to Belgium later, but he's awful. And it's really interesting, though. Like, it's very difficult to put out the wrong lineup with France because everyone is so good, but he's going to find a way to do that. I'm interested to see who he starts. One person who's not going to start is Florian Thauvin. I don't even know if he'll step on the field at the World Cup.
He will. If this was a bet on Bovada, Florian Thauvin over under 5 minutes, I would take the under.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think he steps on the field at all. Thomas Lamar is a favored player for Deschamps. He's been good over the last 2 years.
I wouldn't have brought him either if I was – not that he doesn't deserve to be here, but it's just like you already have players who can do what he does better than he can. I guess the reason he probably is going to see minutes, though, is because they will need someone on the left, and Payet is injured and not here.
Yeah, I'm interested to see who got the Payet spot, or if they were leaving Payet at home. It might have been Thauvin.
Payet would have been locked in the starting 11 if he was healthy.
But like, you look at the France team, and some of this does matter because you only get together for international games every so often. So when you have guys that don't perform necessarily, like if you look over the last 2 years with results for France, the guys that have actually shown up and had reasonable results are three guys, or four if you're going to give Payet credit. But it's Olivier Giroud, it's Antoine Griezmann, and it is Thomas Lamar. So I think he got brought to the World Cup because he's been productive for France in a France jersey over the last 2 years, where you bring in Anthony Martial and he's really done nothing. You bring in some of these other guys and they really haven't performed on an international stage, and Lamar has at least put a few goals in the back of the net during those times.
Well, and the defense has been good, though. You know, the real issue, though, is that Lloris is the captain, and he's just like awful now. He's like a carious level goalkeeper right now.
Yeah, you saw the howler he gave up against Sweden where he basically botched the ball to midfield and gave up a goal from like 60 yards to lose a game in qualification where if like the draw would have sent them directly through. Instead, they ended up having to sweat out the last game. So he's obviously not great. They have other options if they want to play Mandanda, but they're going to go.
They won't, though, because he's the captain. They've like made this horrible mistake where they like – I don't know. Like that, I think that will come into play at some point. I will say this, minus 300 – to win the group, extremely good bet.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a good bet. I like Denmark, but that's mainly because I love Christian Eriksen. And you look during qualifications at what Eriksen did, and it's just – it was remarkable. He finished, like, third or fourth in the scoring in the UEFA qualification as whatever role you want to classify him for Denmark. I mean, he basically plays everywhere for Denmark. He's just all over the field and just completely free, but – they haven't. The thing is, Australia's not good enough. So it basically comes down to like Denmark and Peru, who probably is going to get through as the second place team. And Christian Eriksen's the X factor. No, like neither of the other teams have a guy like Christian Eriksen's caliber. And he does have a little bit of help. Like I like Pione Sisto on the wing, but like you talked about their defense, they left like Eriksen, they left Dormisi.
And well, they have a lot of center backs though, which leads me to believe I actually think they're going to play a different formation that they did not play in qualifying.
They could. I mean, I would buy that.
They brought like six center backs. They brought Andreas Christensen from Chelsea. They brought the guy who plays for Huddersfield. Like they brought like a bunch of center backs and they did not bring either of their wing backs who both play. Ankerson plays domestically, but Dermacy plays in La Liga and is like a full-time starter there. And they did not bring either one of them, which leads me to believe it's going to be a midfield three with Delaney, Eriksen, and someone else, and then Sisto and Yusuf Poulsen on the outside with two strikers.
They don't even have two strikers. That's part of the problem is, like, they have Jorgensen, and their strikers
and,
are
and Dolberg.
I don't know if they start Dolberg. I don't know if they start him. He's not had an international cap at the top level, so we'll have to see who they start up there. I agree. I don't really know what Denmark's going to do.
It's just weirding me out because they don't have they just don't have fullbacks.
No, they don't really have fullback. I mean, they have Strieger Larsson, who started for them during a decent part of the qualifications. So, like, I could see him start. They could start him as the other wing back, and then they could start Poulsen up front with Jorgensen or something as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because Poulsen plays in both spots for Leipzig. Yeah. But yeah, this group, I think there actually could be value if you wanted to bet group, if you wanted to, you know, the top two in any order. So you just go France and Denmark or France and Peru, regardless of who you like, that just juices up that bet a little bit for you. I actually think France and Denmark minus 125 is the top two finishers. Pretty good.
Yeah. I like that a lot. I think that is probably the bet I would go with as well. Like I like Denmark. I think that Peru has the ability to advance. Australia, I just don't see as much of a threat. So I agree. I think that's a really good bet. That's probably what I would go with as well.
DFS wise things you need to know here. For Denmark, it's going to be the fullbacks, whoever it does end up being, and Eriksen. For Peru, Miguel Trauco is actually a defender who takes some of their set pieces, which is not something you're going to see a ton of at this tournament, so that's pretty good. For France, Antoine Griezmann takes their set pieces. Their fullbacks, French fullbacks, are worthless for DFS. They don't do anything.
They're not as bad as they were. If you watched the last game, Pavard
was good, but that's not a French thing. That's just like he's a very active player thing.
Yeah, I mean, like Sidibe is an active player too. I don't think they're great. The problem is they're going to be priced to the moon because they're going to be a big favorite in every game.
In all the games, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to be precautious on that thing. But I don't think they're as bad. Like, it's not like they're trotting out Patrice Evra anymore. So.
And what the other guy, the other City guy who's terrible, Gael Clichy.
Oh, Clichy. Yeah.
And then Paulo Guerrero, I guess, for Peru. I don't know. But I guess I would say this. I wouldn't play French fullbacks in showdown. They would be overpriced for that.
They could be overpriced. I don't know if they'll get in a showdown slate till late in the tournament as well. But it's definitely possible. But, like, and then you have Yoshimir Yotun, I believe, takes some of the set pieces for Peru, too. He's one of the MLS guys.
He was not in the projected starting lineup that I saw for them.
They ran him during qualification. Some games he'd be in, some games he'd be out. Then he'd come in as a sub. So he's a guy that if he's in, he possibly takes their set pieces.
They had been playing Jefferson Farfan in his position, who plays in Russia for Lokomotiv Moscow and who's actually pretty good.
Yeah, Farfán's not bad. So it definitely is something. But Peru's, their lineup not exactly known because they didn't know they were going to have Guerrero till just a few days ago. So their lineup could change a little bit based on that they just got in that information.
So Group D, I actually think this is the most interesting group. This is the most amount of outcomes in this group. So what's your bet for Group C? Mine was, top two in either order, France and Denmark, -125.
I like that bet too. I would have taken Denmark to advance at -140, but France is going to advance as well. So I would just, I'd take your bet and get a little bit better juice on it.
Yep. All right. Group D to win, Argentina -165, Croatia +225, Nigeria +1100, Iceland +1200. So this group has something going on that doesn't exist in any of the other groups, which is all the odds are juiced down artificially because Iceland has gotten so much attention. If there had not been any attention on Iceland, they would have the same odds as Australia. They'd be 25-1 to advance from this, but they've been on like the cover of Sports Illustrated. Grant Wall, who actually was on episode 5 of this podcast, made a documentary about them. They did really well at the Euros, but they are not a talented football team.
No, and especially when you factor in that Gylfi's injured and you're going to have to see if he's fully fit and ready to go. I mean, he hasn't played in a while.
He will play.
His leg would have to fall off because Iceland's most likely not making it back to another World Cup. So not in the near future, at least with him. So he will probably play. But yeah, I mean, this group is – everyone talked about Iceland. And honestly, as Davis will allude to, Iceland doesn't give up goals. You play their goalie because in DFS he gets tons of saves because they're bad, but they give up shots and he makes the saves. I believe he – I don't know if it's the same guy, but in the 2016
Euros – Thor Hallgardsson.
Same guy? So he was a dentist.
I believe it's the same guy, but I'm not 100%.
Yeah, so, I mean, Iceland's – the thing is, Iceland just doesn't have talent. They're going to play low-scoring games, though. So the thing is like, you're going to have a game against Argentina. Iceland could get a 0-0 result because Iceland's very good defensively, and teams have a very difficult time.
I think that is not what I'm worried about. I'm not worried about Argentina not scoring against them. I think that is like a lock. What I would be worried about is Croatia and Nigeria being unable to score against them.
Yeah, Nigeria is one of the biggest question marks in the entire tournament for me because if you look at their roster,
I have no idea what they're going to do.
They have so much talent, but it's not like – I don't know if they're going to be able to reel that harness that talent because they're not going to probably play as – like Iceland's defense is fantastic. The way that they played in the 2016 Euros, I mean, don't get me wrong, it was incredibly boring and not something that you want to watch, but they have long throw-ins, so they just try to get throw-ins and throw the ball all the way into the box. But the thing is Iceland does not concede goals. So a team that isn't very great defensively themselves, Iceland could easily pick up a goal, and then they could easily park the bus, which is what they're going to do anyways, and get a 1-0 result. So a team like Nigeria might have issues breaking them down, because they don't have the talent level that Argentina does with a guy like Messi. So if they can't break them down, it makes it very likely that Iceland goes out there and gets a result in a game like that against Nigeria. And Croatia, as we know, I love Croatia. I think they're one of my favorites.
Like, their talent is so good, but they're just like a mess everywhere. It's like unbelievable that they've like – wait. I was listening to a podcast earlier today. They have not advanced out of the group stage since the 90s.
Yeah, it's been a while.
This generation of players.
Yeah, they struggle, and you just look at it. Like, I mean, when you look for teams to win World Cups, like, so much of it's what happens in the midfield because you need guys that can pull the strings in the midfield. You need guys that can make passes.
And you need guys to not give away the possession. You got to be able to string forward passes together in the midfield. It's why England's not going to be able to do anything because they're playing Jordan Henderson and Eric Dier in the midfield, and you just can't win with that.
Exactly, and you look at a team like Croatia, there's not many teams in the entire tournament that can do what they do out of the midfield, and they have reasonable players all throughout their lineups. Like, you look up top, Mario Mandzukic plays for Juve all the time, and granted, he's not the most clinical goal scorer of all time, but he's definitely a high-quality player.
This is a guy with Champions League final goals who's starting up top for Croatia, and they're +225 to advance in a group with Nigeria and Iceland because they just, for whatever reason, they cannot put it together.
Yeah, so, but I mean, I really think Croatia puts it together. I really like Croatia this year. You look at the Argentina game, and I've watched some of their friendlies, and I watched their qualification. They're not that good. They lack a lot of talent all over the field.
They almost didn't qualify.
They almost did not qualify. And like, I even watched about a week ago, they had a friendly against Haiti. And I watched 60 minutes of the game. They did nothing. They didn't generate. The thing is they play like a Barcelona style. They try to keep possession. But the problem is they don't probe at all. And they don't have any attacking flow with their style. Everything goes through Messi. So until he makes a magical play, they just don't have any offensive ability. So like, everyone talks about Argentina, but I watch their games and I just watch what happens around them. And it just seems like everyone watches Messi. All their players don't do anything. They don't move off the ball. It's just like, we're going to get the ball to Messi.
Said that. Paulo Dybala, who plays for Juventus, who's like this great player, he basically says, like, we all kind of don't like to play with Messi because we just give him the ball.
Yeah, and I mean, you watch the games. They literally give Messi the ball, and then everyone just stands there. It's maddening because they do have a lot of talent. Like, you have Angel Di Maria, you have Paulo Dybala, you have Kun Aguero. Like, you have all of these guys that have so much talent. But
Jorge Sampaoli said that what they're going to do is play a 2-3-3-2. So two center backs, three kind of defensive-minded midfielders, and then five attackers.
It makes sense. I mean, you might as well go with what you have. They have to
try and win these games like 4-3.
Yeah, which I mean, this is what I said. You like their style. The thing is, I just watch their games, and they go with that mindset. But the problem is, it doesn't work when you have no movement off the ball. So when they get the ball to Messi, these guys, like, that's how Barcelona works. Like, everyone's moving off the ball. Messi gets the ball, all these guys are making runs. I watched the Argentina team, and I mean, a lot of it's because of chemistry. These guys don't play with him on an everyday basis, so like, they don't make the runs.
Yeah, they don't do the Barcelona thing where they pass and then they move and then Messi knows where they're going to be.
Yeah, they sit there, they pass the ball to Messi, and then they pick their nose. So if they don't figure that out, they're not going to have much success.
So do you want me to rain on your Croatia parade a little bit?
Go for it. I love them.
Luka Modric, charged with perjury, could face up to 5 years in prison. So you'd be like, well, whatever. Like, what does it matter if one of the midfielders is having, money trouble? It doesn't mean anything. The perjury trial that he was involved in was this wild case with the guy who like owns Dynamo Zagreb or is like an agent for Dynamo Zagreb, where I would assume probably 90% of Croatian players who go out and play for other major European clubs played their youth football. And basically, this guy was in charge of exporting all of these guys out to other countries and had it set up where he just got to take massive amounts of the money from them. But didn't let the players know that. So he was pocketing all this money from all these guys. And Modric originally testified against him with all these other guys and then went back to court a year later and said, actually, none of this happened. He's a stand-up guy. So everyone in Croatia hates Modric right now. And it's like this festering wound with the national team.
Solid. I mean, that thing's been going on for, like you said, forever. Like, I've known about that scandal for years. But, I mean, if everyone hates him, it definitely could play into it. But, I mean, that thing's been going on for
years. I don't actually think that's a thing. I just they mentioned that on the Ringer podcast that I listened to this morning, so I thought I'd bring it up.
Yeah, it's not like the Karim Benzema, Matthew Valbuena saga that goes on. Like, it's not like that, or it's not like Mauro Icardi.
You know what I've read about that is that no one cares, really, except for Deschamps and Valbuena, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds about right. I mean, I'm not shocked by that.
They don't really care.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the Mauro Icardi one where, I mean, you told me about it. I didn't know the full details on the Mauro Icardi one until a couple weeks ago when you told me about it.
Yeah, so for those of you listening, Mauro Icardi is this great striker who is Argentinian but will never play with the national team because one of the midfielders that Argentina – if you can string a pass together and reasonably stick yourself in for a tackle, you're starting in the midfield for Argentina. So they have this guy – Maxi Lopez is his name.
Yeah.
So one of the strikers for the Argentinian national team took his wife, started sleeping with his wife and got tattoos of Maxi Lopez's kids on his arms, kind of like as which are his stepkids now. And so Mauro Icardi will never play for the Argentinian national team as long as the current organizational structure exists.
Yeah, which is hilarious because you basically just watch Gonzalo Higuaín go out there and literally not be able to score. That guy, I mean, he's a good striker. He's a great striker.
Well, he won't really play in this tournament, I don't think.
No, because I mean, I think they were planning to start him, but then he goes out there against Haiti and literally couldn't score again. And Aguero came in off the bench and had a really nice goal.
I actually think they'll do the Dybala, Kun, Messi. Maybe they won't right away, but I think when the games matter, once they advance past this group, I think because they have a good coach. Like their problems are not related to coaching, I don't think. Sampoli is a good coach.
Yeah, I mean, I'll believe the ball is playing with Messi when I see him on the field together.
But I just think, I mean, if you put those guys in a triangle up top, I just feel like they would figure it out.
I mean, I don't disagree with you. I just, like I said, I'll believe that when I see it with that happening.
So my bet for this group is I definitely like Croatia to advance at minus 240. But I actually think if I was going to bet on them at all, I would just bet on them to win the group. Because minus 240 kind of feels gross. But I feel like all they need to do for – I don't think they will lose to Nigeria. I could definitely see Croatia drawing to Iceland, though, like for sure. But yeah, I would bet on that. I would bet on them at plus 225 to win the group. And then also Mandzukic at 66-1 for the Golden Boot.
Yeah, you just stole my Golden Boot call. That was going to be my bet, is Mandzukic to win the Golden Boot at 66-1. I think Croatia gets through the group. I honestly like Croatia to make a run in the tournament. For me, they have everything that goes to what would constitute a deep run in the tournament with all the players that they have. And I think they can get a result against Argentina, because I watch Argentina and I'm just never impressed by them. But Mario Mandzukic should lead the line every single game, should play every minute for a team that, in my opinion, can get to a...
Yeah, because they actually, like a lot of teams, have a rotational striker. They got nobody behind him.
No, like even if they bring in like Kramaric or something, like I just...
Yeah.
They're going to bring him in, but they brought him in on the wing before. And all these other guys, literally, they cross the ball so much. He's great in the air. But him at 66-1 in a group that consists of a Nigeria team that probably isn't going to be sound defensively, Argentina, who just doesn't care about defense, they want to win goals. All of a sudden, you see him come out of the group with four or five goals. He doesn't need much more. If he can get to the semis and pot maybe one or two more. I mean, once you get to the semis, the key is just getting to the semis. Because if you get to the semis, you even have a chance at a third-place game where no one cares about anything. But those goals still count towards the Golden Boot. So I think that they have a good ability to get to a semifinal. And him at 66-1 is just astronomical odds for someone like that.
Yep. All right, Group E, Brazil minus 375 to win, Switzerland plus 650 to win, Serbia plus 700 to win, Costa Rica plus 2500 to win. So Brazil is actually, I think, the best team. Spine to front, they're the best team. And the reason that people don't think they are is because they lost 7-1 to Germany in, I believe, the semifinal in 2014, right?
Yeah. I mean, people overblow that situation so big. Like, that's one game. People had a bad game, and it was obviously a disaster. But that was one game 4 years ago.
And, like, but, like, David Luiz doesn't play anymore. Neymar was injured for that game. I actually think that team is, like, kind of entirely different. But, like, if you just think about it, this is their defense. Thiago Silva and Marquinhos, who play together in PSG. So, like, that's a great defensive partnership. Manchester City's goalkeeper, who had all of these plaudits, is their backup goalkeeper, because Alisson is even better. Yep. They have Marcelo, who is the best attacking left back in the world. And actually, controversial take, I actually think Dani Alves getting injured is like a plus for them.
Yeah, I do too, actually. I don't disagree with you at all. I think it's a big help. I mean, for me, the top three teams are Brazil, Germany, and France, and I don't think anyone's close to those three teams. Those three teams are by far the better teams for me. I don't disagree with you. I think Dani Alves getting hurt might actually – help them quite a bit. But this group's weird. Switzerland, you look at that line, that line's terrible. This group's just pretty weak. I mean, they're not bad. No one in this group is necessarily bad, but you have Serbia, who in my opinion is very strong, and they generally play quite well together. I actually like Serbia a decent amount within this group, but Brazil's most likely going to win this group.
Oh, I feel just as confident that they will win this group as that France will win theirs. Like, I actually, for whatever reason, I, like, follow a couple Serbian beat writers, or I have them on my, like, Twitter list, and they're all very, like, not into the Serbian. They do not think this is a good Serbian team.
Yeah, I love Mitrovic. I like Dusan Tadic. I like Kolarov. Like, I like all these guys.
But they're having to do things like Milinkovic-Savic has to play as like the 10.
Yeah.
Instead of like in the role that's like best suited for him.
Yeah, which is what happens for a lot of these type of teams. Like, you have guys that just have to mold themselves into a little bit different role because they just don't have enough talent in other positions. But yeah, like Switzerland. I mean, you look at the Swiss roster, and I mean,
they're just so weak. Like, Harris Seferovic is going to probably be up front, and he can't score goals. We watched him in the Euros just not be able to put in sitters over and over again.
No, Switzerland Switzerland is the woat.
Yeah, Switzerland's bad. I mean, the thing is Costa Rica is not bad. Most of the
they're team- actually they're actually not. I actually think if you put a gun to my head and you had to bet on I had to choose one of the teams that's projected to finish fourth in the group to advance, I actually think it would be Costa Rica.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. I think that they're solid. Like, the thing is with CONCACAF teams is they usually are solid defensively, and they usually can eke out results. Like, you look at every big World Cup situation, CONCACAF usually has decent showings from teams that are obviously less talented than other teams, but they're able to get results because the guys play together a lot. The guys buy into the system, and they are able to eke out results. Like, Costa Rica had a good showing in the last World Cup. USA has been in the round of 16. Mexico shows well. So, like, these teams, even though they're obviously not as talented, have decent results.
And they play – I actually don't think this can be understated. Teams that play a real back five with, like, a good shape and the fullbacks are fullbacks and not, like, wingers, that's really frustrating to play against in international soccer. When a team knows how to defend in that shape.
Yeah, if a team knows how to defend in that shape and actually running a back five instead of like a back three with like wingers, it's very difficult to break down because there's just three center backs in the box clogging it down, and then you have guys cutting down crossing angles outside. So if you have teams that actually sell out and actually run that lineup and actually play it as a defensive back five, it's very difficult to break down.
Yeah, like I think that Costa Rica to advance over Switzerland and Serbia is not like that insane. Switzerland will not advance. I would definitely bet. So I actually think my bet from this group is Switzerland not to advance -130, because I just think they're not good.
Yeah, my bet actually in this group is Switzerland to finish last at +320. I wrote up about it on the Action Network. I think that they're not great, and I think that all three of those teams, I like Serbia more and I like Costa Rica more. So one of those three teams is finishing last in that group, and it's very reasonable to me to see that it would be Switzerland.
And they're – so a couple things to note. Their two best attacking players, Shaqiri and Dzmali. I don't even know how to say his first name. They've had, like, these awful domestic seasons. Like, Shaqiri's team got relegated. He was banged up, did not have a good season by his standards. And Dzmali got transferred from the MLS to the Serie A, where he just, like, hasn't played. He's just been, like, a total bench warmer. So that's a giant thing.
Yeah, they just don't have much.
DFS notes is, so Brazil is, like, the anti-Spain. They're all good for DFS. Like, Coutinho's great for DFS, Neymar, Costa, Firmino. What formation do you think they rode? Do you think they do Bobby or Gabby Jesus at striker?
I think they're going to run Gabby Jesus at striker. I think that he runs a little bit better with their national team. I think that he fits the style a little bit better. So I think they run him. And then obviously, like, you're going to see total bums like Paulinho in the midfield because for some reason they refuse not to start him. But yeah, like, you talk about Brazil and, like, you have their fullbacks. Like, Marcelo is just going to bomb forward all tournaments. Like, you're going to have so many guys that are very solid from
the And the right back might be cheaper than in a lot of – Fagner is his name. He is yeah. – he plays, I think, for Flamengo in the Brazilian league. I don't actually know if that's his club. But he'll be a little bit cheaper than I think most, like, heavy favorite fullbacks would be, just because there's not any data for him in the DraftKings system.
Yeah, there's no data for him in the DraftKings system, but also you have the fact that there's not any friendly data either. Like, the Brazil friendlies aren't being played on their main slates for DraftKings, so I think that he could be relatively cheap, at least in comparison. But he should be pretty good. Like, everyone – for Brazil on the outside on the wings, like, produce generally because they generally get balls in quite frequently.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing. So move air. Hold on, I gotta pause. All right, so now we have Group F, a really interesting group actually, because I think just like the last group, the projected fourth place finisher, it's not out of the realm of possibility that they could advance. So Group F is Germany -300 to win, Mexico +500 to win, Sweden +750 to win, South Korea +2,000 to win. Germany just they don't really have a superstar. Actually, internationally, Thomas Muller is their best player. He's been their leading goal scorer. He kind of does most of the finishing for them because their last couple, what they played with Mario Gomez as their forward for most of the Euros. I don't even know who their, I guess their striker was Miroslav Klose in 2014 when they won. Mexico, Chicharito and Irving Lozano. Sweden, mostly powered by Emil Forsberg now that Zlatan is gone. And South Korea, our boy, Hyung Sun Min, the GOAT, the real GOAT. This is a fun group. These games will all actually be entertaining.
Yeah, this group's pretty fun. I mean, I really like what happened in this group. I mean, I like Sweden a lot going into this tournament. You'll obviously disagree, but I think getting rid of Zlatan is going to be huge for them because...
No, I think anytime you remove someone that needs that much of the ball to be effective, it's like I agree with you.
Yeah, like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, Messi with that much of the ball is a necessity and it makes sense because he's that good. Zlatan's not like... Zlatan's great. He's a great player, but he's not... in that mold. But you look through the qualifications, they looked pretty good, all qualification. Marcus Berg and Ola Toivonen really played well off of each other for the most part in the entire build-up to the qualifications. And then Emil Forsberg is obviously fantastic, and he should pull the strings for them.
Yeah, I don't know. I can see a scenario where Sweden kind of just bombs out, though, and Mexico, they always lose that last game. Right, they always lose that last game when they need to advance.
Yeah, I mean, Mexico likes to choke it off pretty easily in those type of situations. So, like, you can definitely see a situation where Mexico blows a couple games in that spot. But I mean, even like you talked about, Korea has a elite level player in Sinaldo, and you give someone like that in a situation where he can counterattack. And Koreans have had good track record over the last few World Cups of at least coming and showing up and playing reasonably well. So you don't really have, like, for example, Group A, you have, like, three teams that are just terrible. You don't really have any terrible teams in this group whatsoever.
No, there are no terrible teams, which kind of makes it seem like I definitely wouldn't bet on Germany to, like, win. Like, I don't think them at minus 300 is, like, a comparable bet to France to win the group if you're giving me a group winner, like, I'm just placing it on France. I'm placing it on Spain. I think they're so much more likely, especially because Germany is not like a high octane team. Like they're kind of similar to Spain, just a little bit more decisive. I would guess is what I would say. They don't have many great finishers though.
No, but I mean, but then you talk about with Muller, like an international level Muller is like the best player in the world. So it's a situation where he'll obviously be there and he can put some balls in the back of the net. I think he's probably pretty close to the all-time record for World Cup goals. He probably could hit it this World Cup.
He's got 10, I think I saw.
Yeah, he could probably get pretty close. What's the record at? It's a little bit higher up there. But he's probably – he's got the ability to – he's probably going to take the penalties for him. He's probably going to play under. I'm hoping Timo Werner actually starts for them. And
Miroslav Klose has the record, 16.
16. So, I mean, Muller, it's not outside of the realm of possibility. Muller, if he could pot six goals in this World Cup, is the joint top goal scorer in World Cup history. So, I mean, we talk about people that show up on international stages. No one does that really better than Thomas Muller.
No, definitely not. And I – spoiler, but Germany will be my pick to win, I think.
Yeah, I definitely think that's possible.
Muller at 25-1 for the Golden Boot.
The problem is he's playing a little bit different of a position. They talked about playing him like out of the right mid where he played with Bayern and had some success here, or he's going
to
play.
Yeah, these idiots, he's going to have to because they didn't bring Sané.
Yeah, we talked about it the other day, but leaving Leroy Sané at home is absolutely mind-blowing to me, and I cannot believe that they did it. But they left Sané at home for, like, Julian Brandt, which, I mean, Julian Brandt's a fine player. There's nothing against Julian Brandt.
He won't play, though. It'll be Royce and Muller on the outsides.
He's going to play until Royce gets – he's going to play once Royce gets injured 10 minutes into the first game.
Oh, I'm not ready for it.
But, yeah, I just don't understand the logic in leaving Sané at home. I mean, with how productive he was with City this year. And just the fact that he gives a different dimension to a German team. Like you talked about with Martial, bringing different dimensions off the bench and having that as an option is a lot more valuable than just running out the same stagnant options as what you previously had.
Do any of the books you look at have top assists as something that you can bet on?
I haven't seen a top assist total.
I would think Ozil at whatever price he is actually pretty reasonable. Which, like, if you if you only watch the EPL and you are listening to this podcast, you'll be like, that sounds horrible. No, he actually tries really hard when he plays for Germany. It's like he's a different player.
The issue with that, I think, is going to be, I think the guy who's going to lead the tournament in assist is generally going to be a guy that has set pieces. And with Germany, Kroos will generally take them, or maybe you might even see Kimmich take them. But you probably need one or two assists off of random corners. And if he's
That would be really wild if Kimmich is, he's like, what, like 22? He just comes in, inherits the position that Philipp Lahm left, is taking set pieces, is bombing up. What a legend he is.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I mean, he's an elite-level player. He's been fantastic for Bayern Munich for the last couple of years. I mean, he's been good on an international stage as well. He has taken sets from them on the international stage as well.
Mexico sets are who? Cuadrado?
Who knows? Because it depends who they play. Like, they could play anyone. It's probably, like, honestly, it could be anyone. I would guess where it's Cuadrado if he's
Mexico
starting.
is like dollar general Argentina. Like, they do have, like, legitimately good attacking talent. But their defense is like they're going to be starting like a 39-year-old at center back.
Well, they could play like Leun could have sets as well. Like they've had different guys have sets. Like, I mean, you saw when Elias Hernandez came in and played in the Gold Cup, he took every set and had like 30 across the game. But so it's just all of a matter of who Mexico ends up playing, who's going to take the sets. Because it could be like either of the Dos Santos brothers too.
I honestly forget that they're even Mexican because they were like they're just so ineffective for the Galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what they are.
All right, Group G, Belgium minus 125 to win, England plus 115 to win. Oh, wait, what was your best bet for the last one?
My best bet in the last group is Sweden advance, like plus 143, I think.
Okay, I'll co-sign on that. I actually think they're more likely to advance than Mexico. I would say if I wanted to make a longer bet, it would be South Korea to advance. I won't call that my favorite bet, but I think that's a reasonable bet.
I agree.
So Tunisia 22-1, Panama 66-1. Panama is actually the worst team in the tournament. I think they're worse than Iran. They're worse than Saudi Arabia.
I think Tunisia might be the worst team. I mean, I think that these two teams.
No, Tunisia is decent.
They're not that decent. The thing is with Panama, I'm going to go back to it. Like CONCACAF teams defend well. Panama defends well, and I'm going to tell you exactly how this group's going to play out. Belgium's going to win the group. England's going to lose against Belgium.
England is going to lose to Tunisia.
Well, sure, England could lose anyone, but like literally, this is like the most England path in the World Cup. They're going to beat Belgium, or they're going to lose to Belgium badly. They're going to beat Tunisia. They're going to draw 0-0 against Panama because they can't generate a goal. And then either they're going to get eliminated there on goal differential, or they're going to go to the round of 16, at which point they're going to lose 1-0 and get knocked out. That's literally England's like path in the World Cup.
You know what actually is I'm gonna make another bet on air. What bet do you think I'm about to make right now? Just if you
England
had to guess.
England is last in the group.
No. Raheem Sterling, golden boot.
Oh, man. Can he even score? Like, is it Leslie get proven?
100-1.
I mean, he should be getting decent run for them. I can't really see them running anyone else out there on that wing.
If he just even is 75% of Manchester City, Raheem Sterling, he's like, he can do this.
To be fair, the chances Raheem Sterling gets in the Premier League, like I would score double-digit goals if you just
– Okay, that is true.
If you literally just plopped me in at the exact moment in which he has to kick the ball, it'd be like, can I literally kick the ball 1 inch into the net that the ball hits me?
Do you remember when England made Harry Kane take corners for some reason?
Yeah, it was absolutely mind-blowing. It's going to be interesting. I don't know what England's going to do with set pieces. I'm assuming Rashford's going to take
them. Ashley Young's going to take them all.
Really? You think Ashley Young's? I think Rashford's going to take them. But, I mean, that also means Rashford has to be on the field.
They're not going to start Rashford.
I think he starts a left wing. It doesn't matter.
England's – it's so fascinating because, like, if you listen to a lot of soccer podcasts, people just talk about England a lot because most of the good soccer podcasts are English. So I've heard a lot about this. And you know what? I actually think I've decided on what my solution is to how to work this England system.
How's that? Bet against them every game?
No, no. What I would do if I was coaching them.
Oh.
I would start Dyer and Dele Alli in the 3-4-3 midfield. And then I would either put Lingard out on the left or Rashford out on the left with Sterling and Kane.
I don't disagree with that. The thing is, like, England, like you talked about, England doesn't have the midfield to pass the ball up and down. Like, they just – they don't have the talent. Like, we talked about Harry Kane and how good he is. But, like, we've watched because every time they were on an FA Cup slate, we watched DFS perspective. And Davis would talk about how good Harry Kane is. And then they'd get into a game against, like, some seventh-tier English team, and Harry Kane would literally not register a shot because he's just – He's not a game breaker. He's a great striker. For a striker,
no, he finishes amazingly, but you got to get him the ball.
Yeah, but if you don't have the guys that can string the ball and get him the ball, Harry Kane is not a guy that can go and make his own plays. Like, he's just not effective.
I actually think the 3-4-3 is, like, way better for that, though, because he's going to be on the end of a lot of crosses in this system.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. We know England's going to choke this away, and they're just not good.
No, they're not. So that's best bet, Group G. Are you going with England not to advance?
I would go with England not to advance.
Not to advance at 4.5-1 is actually good. So let me tell you why I think Tunisia is actually okay. Their defense features several top-flight guys, but their attack is all guys that play in League One.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, they have some talent.
They can get there, yeah.
I mean, they have talent. Like, they have Naimi Slitti. They have Wahbi Khazri. I mean, he hasn't really been playing as much for them, but they have some talent. And England's just going to choke it away like they always do. So, I think that England just is going to massively choke. But you also could decide that if you're going to bet on England not to advance, you could just decide to just put Tunisia to advance or Panama to advance bet instead as well.
I mean, you could bet both of those and still come out ahead, regardless if England is not advanced. Yeah. All right. So that was Group G. Now we are on the last group, waiting for Bovada to load. Group H. This is actually a really interesting group. No one is actually like minus money to advance. Colombia +120, Poland +185, Senegal +450, Japan +900. This is an interesting group. Colombia is good, though. Colombia is just, like, straight up good.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I love me some Colombia. Like, our good buddy, Paul Vilmazar, pew on Twitter.
Huge fan.
A massive Colombia fan. He's one of the guys that originally got me into soccer and one of the guys that really got me to start enjoying it. So, I talk about Colombia. Like, they play an exciting style. They play a fun style. I get to watch James Rodriguez, but – yeah, you look at this group's really weak, and Poland actually had an injury issue.
No, it's not weak. It's very even. There's not a stud team in it, and there's not a bottom feeder in it.
See, I mean, I guess that's true. I would go more weak, but Poland lost Kamil Glik, and he's not going to be at the World Cup, which is their biggest cog defensively. So,
I actually didn't know that. That's a big injury.
Yeah, so, like, you look at that. You remove Kamil Glik. Like, I'm pretty sure the lines have moved quite frequently away from Poland as that news has came out. But, like, you look at all the other groups, and so Pot A was the big dog teams plus Russia. All of the big dog teams that were in Pot A are massive favorites to win their group. The two exceptions, Russia, who going into the tournament, based on, like, FIFA rankings, is the worst team in the tournament. So they're, and Russia, if you remove them from being at home, Russia's obviously one of the three or four worst teams on paper in the tournament. They are not the favorite to win the group. The only other team that was in Pot A, I believe, to not be favored to win their group was Poland. Poland, you look at their team, they're very slow. Their outside backs are slow. Their wingers are slow. They just don't have guys that can keep up with pace. Like, when you have, like, Sadio Mane running at you, when you have James Rodriguez and Juan Cuadrado running at
Senegal,
you.
Senegal to win the group might be one of the dogs that makes more sense to bet on them to win the group as opposed to advancing.
Possible. Like I said, you have all these issues. Like, Poland's not very good. You have Lewandowski, who's obviously a very clinical finisher. Unless I play him in DFS, then he has no chance to score a goal. But other than that, like,
he is +325 to lead the group in scoring. That's like, if I was going to bet on group scoring, I'll bet that one on air as well.
Yeah, like, I mean, it makes total sense. But, yeah, like, if I just look at this group, I look at the speed and lack of it that Poland has on the outside. It makes it very difficult for me to predict them to be able to advance. Like, I really think Poland to not advance, and honestly, that might be, like, my biggest long shot to bet on is Poland to finish last in the group. I think that it's a very reasonable possibility, and they're like plus 455 to finish last in the group if you want an outsider bet. But if I'm
plus,
just talking
plus
like,
500 on, you know what, Japan to finish last at plus money is actually pretty good too, because yeah, they're not a bottom feeder, but they are, they don't, Japan has no finishing.
No, they have no finishing. And honestly, so I wrote up Senegal. And if you look through the Senegal roster, some of the biggest important factors within these tournaments, as we talked about with Croatia, is the midfield. Senegal actually has a pretty solid midfield.
They have all of their midfielders play in the Premier League.
Yeah, like all of their midfielders play in the Premier League, and they're all good for the most part. Like you have Gonaguet.
I think Gonaguet is like one of the best, like kind of Conte sort. Not, he's not as good as Conte because he's not quite as, you know, it's mental, but like physically he does the Conte job, you know, so yeah. Well.
So like you have a Senegal team that they have this down the middle spine that is. Like, they have Koulibaly at center back. Like, Koulibaly plays for Napoli, plays Champions League football, plays very high-end European football. So, like, down the middle, Senegal actually a really solid team, and I think Senegal is a decent bet within this group as well.
Yeah, I think all of that is pretty reasonable. So, that's the group done. That's all of them.
That's all of them. We're all through them.
So, if you had to bet on someone at their current odds to win, who do you want?
If I'm betting on someone at current odds to win the World Cup, I'm betting on Croatia.
33-1.
Yeah. If I'm taking someone to win the group, I mean, I do think Brazil, France, and Germany are the most likely teams to win, but 4-1 or 3-1 isn't a great enough number. And then I think a lot of the other teams in the middle tier is just not great. So if I was taking on one team to win at their current odds, it would probably be Croatia. The other option for me would be Belgium, because I think they get through the group quite easily, and I think that their round 16 matchup is quite easy.
12-1 is not bad for them.
So those would be my two bets to win the World Cup based on current odds.
I would go Colombia at 40-1 or Brazil at 4.5-1. But it's like betting golf, where like you could bet Tiger Woods, or you know, you could bet Dustin Johnson at 6-1, but why would you?
Okay, yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that, I mean, I love Colombia as well. And, I mean, I think Brazil, for me, Brazil and France are so even money to win. But, like, for me, especially, like, with those odds, like, if I'm going to bet on a tournament winner, I want to get a lot of bang for my buck. And I think I get it more if I go down a little bit further.
That's fair. I actually, this has got to be a total fish bet. Like, only total fish would do this. But the winner top goal scorer parlay odds that they do, like you can get like Brazil to win and Neymar to lead in goals at 20-1. Like I like that one. And I also like Germany and then a non-German player.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense too, because like a lot of these parlays, like for example, if Croatia wins the World Cup, there's a really high probability Mario Mandzukic leads the tournament in goals, right? So if you can do a double parlay with like Croatia and Mandzukic to win the World Cup, you're going to just look at a sick betting odds. And if they do win the World Cup, it's a very high likelihood that he does win Golden Boot. And same thing with some of these other teams. Like you look at some of these teams, if you have a bet which you can parlay with a guy on their team to win the World Cup, because you're guaranteeing that guy 8 games. Like if you're winning the World Cup, you're guaranteeing 8 games. He's probably, if you're getting there, it means you're winning every game. It means you're scoring goals in almost every game. So if you can have a guy that has a high percentage of their goal odds within that team, that's a great parlay to make.
Yep. And Sean and I have a showdown slate that's starting right now, so we're not going to get to showdown opinions. Maybe we'll do it a little bit later. But this was, I think this is a good starting place. Honestly, if you listen to all of this, you will be ready. You will have the information that you need on like the quality of the teams to like start maybe placing some bets and definitely start entering some DFS contests. So if you come from this not knowing anything about the World Cup, this is a good place to start thinking about it in the sense of trying to make some money off of it. So with that, good luck, everyone, and thanks for listening.